fifth parak of Bo Patsia, which is Ezu Neshech. It's a parak all to itself. It discusses the prohibition of taking ribis. Ribis is the prohibition of ribis is to take for a, when a person extends a loan, to take back value or receive value in excess of the principal of the loan. That could be translated as interest, but that would be a bad translation, because the person is also restricted from any kind of, the lender is restricted from receiving any kind of additional value, even if it's non-tangible, even if it's indirect, any benefit whatsoever is forbidden. The pasuk says, "Es kaspecha lutiten lo b'neshech." Your money you may not give to him for neshech, for interest, that's translated now loosely as that. "V'marvis lo titen achlecha." And you can't give your food for marvis, for an excess of before. You can't get excess food of before. So the truth is that the word neshech and the word ribis, or your marvis, but the same idea, mean the exact same thing. There are two different words used in the psukim. They refer to the two different angles of what we'll call it interest, even though it's not the right word exactly. The interest is achieving. On the one hand, it's neshech, it's the word like the word noshech is what a snake does. It bites, like it bites into the borrower because he's forever underwater trying to make up for his interest payments. You may know the feeling. And ribis from the word marbet, to increase, because essentially the lender is self aggrandizing. He's acquiring more stuff. He's getting richer. He's amassing more for himself. So that's also looked at as not right. Now we discussed yesterday the question. I'm going to discuss it very briefly today, again, just to, so it's all one page in one place. What is the problem with lending at interest, or with ribis? Why is that a problem? Because, as we discussed, the other commodities other than cash, a person could rent out, and that's perfectly legitimate. No problem in renting out your studio apartment and taking money for that. So why, when you rent out your money, all of a sudden the Torah frowns on it? So I explained that the difference is that the Torah is looking at Jews particularly as, and Jews are meant to look at themselves this way, as an extended family. Every Jew is everyone else's brother or cousin, whatever. Since we're a family, it's not right to lend your own family member and need money interest. That's not the way to go about doing things. The Torah is looking at it as, that's, I don't have a good word for it. I don't know if not nice is the right word, or unethical is the right word, or not done. But the Torah is telling you that that's not the way to go. Family doesn't lend to family members in need at interest. As opposed to, if I have an object that you want and you're my brother, I'll sell it to you. What's wrong with that? Or if you don't want to pay to me, rent it from me, that's also acceptable. It's reasonable. I can rent to somebody else. I guess, now, conjecturing a little bit, but we could say an economy couldn't work if no one could charge any sort of, installment payments or, rental. That's not how the Torah didn't have that in mind. The Torah is pretty capitalistic in nature, we've seen in the previous parakim. But lending money, or actually lending any object to be repaid, and that if the repayment would provide extra value to the lender, so that would be forbidden under this Isser of Ribis. We actually said that the Rambam counts six different Isurim. If a person lends charging ribis, then he actually is over six different Torah violations, and the Ramban adds a seventh, so it's bad news. And unlike other financial restrictions the Torah puts on people, here the borrower is also over two different violations, two different issei deraisa. So you can't, it's not just bad that you're the lender, you're also bad if you're the borrower and participate in this illegal transaction of charging an interest. And similarly, it would be forbidden for a lawyer to act on behalf of such a contract, or a witness to serve as a witness in such a contract. This is a forbidden transaction, and the Torah doesn't let you lend the interest. Now, not now, but at a later date, we'll discuss this, because you're well aware that this goes on, and it goes on through I'll call legal loophole, which I'm not discussing right now, called the Heter Iska. Okay, we're not exploring it this minute. That's what got us sidetracked yesterday. We're not going there today. There is an issue, but I'm not discussing it now. Let's get the principles of ribis today clear before we move on to the side issues and the practical application and the ways around certain things. So, but I pointed out one thing yesterday, which I think says a lot, which is everything else in Ezekiel that we learned so far, in Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, and Bava Basra, essentially all plays itself out in the section of the Shulchan Aruch called Choshen Mishpat, which is the laws of torts and damages and legal, financial obligations, business law. That's where things belong. But interestingly, The laws of Ribbis do not appear there. The laws of Ribbis appear in another section of the four sections of the Shulchan Aruch. Chosh and Mishpat is financial law, let's call it. There's another section called Or Chaim, you're familiar with, that's like daily law. And there's another section called Eben Ezer, family law. But the fourth section, not in that order, but the fourth section is called Yoredeya. And Yoredeya deals with what usually translated as ritual law. You'll find in Yoredeya rules like how to keep kosher and how to give tzedakah, because that's considered to be a religious obligation, not a financial obligation. Right? And in the rules of the laws of Ribbis appear in Yoredeya, not in Chosh and Mishpat. Because I'm sort of speculating, but it's an educated speculation, if you will, that the way that the Torah put it together, he looked at it rightly. So it was not a financial issue like defrauding people or overcharging people. It's a separate issue of this is not the way that a Jewish community should function in a religious way. So the same way we give tzedakah and we keep kosher, we also and we observe the laws of Nida. All those things belong in Yoredeya. So we also don't lend at Ribbis because that's not the way a Jewish society religiously should function. It's not a financial issue, it's like something else. Okay? Fine. Now, the Pasuk used two different words, Neshech, like the biting, like the snake biting, and Marvis, like Ribbis, you know, building up, increasing one's wealth. They mean the exact same thing. The Mishnah, however, has chosen the convention of referring to D'oraisa, Torah prohibited, Ribbis, it calls it Neshech. And the Durabanan, it refers to as Ribbis or Marbis, which I don't have any good reason for that. I'm sure there is a good reason, I don't know it. But that's the convention the Mishnah has taken on for itself. So when it says Neshech, it means Doraisa. And when it says Marbis, it means Durabanan. Okay, that's just the convention you'll have to know, even though from the Torah's perspective, they're both words used in the Pasuk, they both are Doraisa terms. Now, for something to be hold your thoughts or comments or anything for 20 minutes. I'll get to that and then we'll answer. But I want to. It's not that complicated, but if I don't make it clear, it really is not that simple either. So when it comes to Ribbis D'oraisa, for someone to qualify that the Torah contravention of this prohibition of lending at interest, again, for lack of a better term, it has to meet two conditions. Number one, the transaction has to be structured as a loan, their halva, as opposed to a financial transaction, like, for example, a forward contract, which I'll get to, if you know what that means, I'll get to it in a second. That's the difference. If we structure this as a financial transaction, but there's somehow I'm being compensated for being delayed in payment, or perhaps you're potentially profiting from laying out the money now, that would be not the doraisa issue of Ribbis, because midoraisa, for it to be Torah prohibition, has to be structured as a loan, not as a financial transaction. I'll go back there afterwards. The second issue, there are two conditions. The second condition is that the ribis has to be what's called ktsutsa, which means like set at the time the loan is made. If, in other words, when I extend to you this principle and I tell you here's the 100 shekels, we're agreeing that I'm going to get some other value in addition to the 100 shekels that you're going to repay me. That could be a right to park my car in your lot. That would be Ribbis d'oraisa. It's not, so that's why interest is a bad translation. It could be simply that you all of a sudden decide to be much, that you agreed to, I don't know what, take my, now you're going to walk my kid to the gun in the morning. Anything, any service you provide me, any value you provide me, and certainly any actual, when you pay back, if we say you'll pay back 110, or we'll have the loan linked to the cost of living or something where there's a pre-agreed at the time of the loan agreement that the amount paid back is going to be more than just the principal. And again, you see from the Torah's perspective, Midoraisa, we're looking at what we call technically the nominal value as opposed to the real value, meaning the Torah does not consider the possibility of compensating for inflation, purchasing power. It's also a separate interesting question, we can discuss it later, but I don't want to go there now. It also sidetracked us yesterday at length. All I will say for right now is that inflation is a modern phenomenon, and it's something that arises out of the fact that you have fiat currency, not real money. The Torah is not conceiving of that world. So it's a halachic modern-day problem how to deal with compensation for devaluation of one's currency. Because in other words, if I lend you $100 today for 30 years, taking back $100 in 30 years' time is obviously laughable because it hasn't got the purchasing power it did now. Nevertheless, to agree that we would link it to the cost of living or, you know, the CPI or whatever the story is, that would be ribis d'oraisa. How are you going to do it? Not for now, but I'm just pointing that, bringing it to your attention. But that's the setup. Okay. Now, right. So mid-d'oraisa, that would mean if we agree anything at the time the loan is made, any additional value I'll receive whatsoever, that would be nisr d'oraisa. It would also apply if, even if at the time we extended the loan, there was no agreed compensation in excess of the principal. But then, let's say the loan came due a year later and you couldn't pay. So I agreed to give you an extension. But now I say, with the extension, I expect something in addition to the principal. That would also be a d'oraisa, because it's like essentially looked at as we're essentially making a new loan at this time. And that second loan would be ketzutza, we have a set agreement at the time that new loan's being extended of an obligation to pay back more than was originally laid out. Okay, so those are two. To be a d'oraisa, you have those two issues. It has to be a derech halva, it has to be a loan, as opposed to for like a, you know, a rental agreement or a sale agreement or a forward contract. And it has to be ketzutza, it has to be at the time that the agreement at the time the loan is made must stipulate some additional payment. If it does meet those two conditions, we're out of the world of the d'oraisa isser of ribis. But when we talk about isurei ribis midrabbanan, the prohibitions of ribis rabbinically. So first let's look at the ketzutza issue, the set amount. So if at the time I extended the loan, we don't agree on anything more than just you'll pay me back whatever you're going to pay me back, the principal. But then, by the by, as the year progresses, you decide to provide me some other value. I'm the lender, you're the borrower. Whatever that would be, it could be cash, it could be services, it could be just being extra nice to me with a nice smile. All that would be asur midrabbanan. It's not ketzutza, we didn't set it ahead of time at the time the loan was made, so that's not d'oraisa. But since I'm getting extra value, I'm benefiting from the loan, and that would be asur midrabbanan. Okay? It's often called avak ribis, which means like, you know, ribis dust. Because not directly ribis, because we didn't agree to it. When we made the loan, I didn't put you, you know, over the barrel. But now you've sort of placed yourself over a barrel, or indirectly you let it bin noshech, it's bitten into you, it's costing you more than you borrowed. So that would be asur midrabbanan. Okay, now there are two issues on this topic, that on the issue of, like if I draw a chart, I'd say the two conditions of ketzutza pre-setting the amounts and derech halva, it has to be as a loan, to be d'oraisa, those are two conditions. So I'm in the issue of the ketzutza issue, the preset amounts, the preset obligation to pay more than the principal amount. So in that world, there's also two separate questions, which is what happens if I, before the loan is extended, I give you some value. Or after the loan has been repaid back, I give you some value. So let's talk about the first one first. Ribis mukdemis means like, you know, literally means, you know, let's call it interest that's paid before the loan is made. So what happens is, let's say for example, I anticipate needing to borrow money from you in the near future. So I decide now would be a great time to send you a big Hanukkah present. Right? So that would be, I'm like basically buttering you up to make a loan, and essentially I'm giving you extra value, but it's coming before the loan is made. So, I'll call it, loosely speaking, questionable behavior. However, the Ramah paskins that if it's a small amount, I don't know where the small, how you draw the line on small, but if it's not excessive, and it's not explicit that your intention is that this should be connected to some subsequent future loan, then it's permissible. Even if your intention as the would-be borrower is essentially to butter the guy up. That would be... it's permissible. There are those who say no, but I'm telling you, la halacha, it is, if it's within moderation, even if your intention is to garner the favor of the lender, the would-be lender, as long as it's not explicit that's payments for the loan, and he's not getting it, and the loan hasn't been made yet, then it's not a problem. And similarly, the lender is allowed to extend the loan, even though he's received gifts from the borrower. So that's okay. That's ribis mukdemis, that's okay. Now, ribis mulcheres means post facto, after the loan has been repaid. So in other words, I bought $100 from you, I paid you back $100 from you, but now all of a sudden, pitom, next time you invite me for Shabbos, and it's all over, I come with bearing gifts. So is that okay? So again, it's a gray-ish area, but the still have to ask your rabbi if you have an actual problem on your hands, but the gist of it is, in the near term after the loan, it would be okay to give a small gift, But again, it cannot be explicitly connected to the loan. So in other words, we have a loan, I lend you money, and after you pay me back, so we're even, now invite you for Shabbos, you can come with a bottle of wine. That's not a problem. Okay? It would be a problem if in the thank you note you said, thank you for having me for Shabbos and for letting me the money. That would be, now you've got a problem with the opponent. But if it's inexplicit, so then if it's near the time of the loan and it's a small gift, that's going to be okay. What to find near, what to find small, that's, you know, rabbi for that one. And if it's farther away from the loan, it becomes mutter even if it's big. In other words, 5 years ago I lent you money, and now I invite you to my daughter's wedding, but tell me you come with a massive, you know, $1,000 gift for my daughter, that'll be okay. So I'm not connected anymore. Okay, so now what I've said so far, to sum me up, so keep it clear, there's two conditions for ribbis midoraisa. Number one, derech halva, and two, ketsutza. It has to be made as a loan, as opposed to a financial transaction, like a purchase or a forward, whatever it is. And two, it has to be that the loan is extended and there's an agreement at the outset to pay more value than was extended in the original loan. So, I told you now about ketsutza, if it's not agreed upon at the time of the loan, but later on you end up delivering me, the lender, value, directly or indirectly, providing me a service, whatever it is, that's all asur midrabanan. What about, now I want to talk about the other side, which is a little actually more subtle, which is the derech halva angle. It also has to be made as a loan. So if the transaction happens in a way where what happens between you and me is not a loan, it's something else, but essentially there's, when we look back on the transaction, we see that there was a benefit to the person who was allowed to forego having the money in his pocket. That's the problem. That's what interest usually is, right? I'm saying I want to have the money in my bank account, and in exchange you'll compensate me for that by paying more money later. So here what happens is, let's say, for example, a prepaid discount. I say, listen, I'm in the on the watermelon business, and I need cash to set up my farm. Meanwhile, there's no watermelons on the market, and you don't need watermelons now, but next summer there will be. So you say, listen, I know next year watermelons are going to go for $10, $10 of whatever, a crate. And so you agree to pay me now for watermelons for next summer, but you give me $100, and I agree to give you 11 crates. The going rate is 10, so should we get 10 per each, so it should be $100 to get you 10 crates, but I agree to give you 11 in next summer. So that would be usser. Why? Because you are essentially, we're doing a transaction now essentially where you're lending me effectively $100, and I'm agreeing to pay you back in kind $110, right, down the way, next summer. So that would be usser, but that's usser only midrabanan. Why is usser midrabanan? Because it's not their halva, it's not a loan that was made. It was just essentially a forward agreement. I agreed.
We have this all the time.
The
fellow
stuff. There's lots of clauses. Just hear the principle. If it's what they do is mutter or usser or legitimate or illegitimate, just hear the principle. So let's make clear, get the idea straight. If we're essentially doing what we call a forward contract, I'm telling you I'm going to pay you. There's nothing here, but next year you'll deliver the goods to me. I'm paying you now for something, you're giving me a discount to that future price. So that is the equivalent of interest, the economic equivalent of interest. And that'll be forbidden, but only midrabanan, because it's not structured as a loan, it's structured as something else, as a transaction, a sale. Okay? But only midrabanan. Now, the second way in which it also could be usur midrabanan is, even if we don't set the price, like that first example I said, we know the price will be $10 a carton next summer, right? And we're just agreeing now to give you more value, giving 11 cartons. But there's a separate problem, which is that we just don't know the value next year necessarily. Okay? In other words, we say this year, last year they were $10. Let's talk with paper, reams of paper. Now, who knows what paper is a commodity which moves from year to year? Who knows what paper is going to cost next year? Right now, there's no, we get shipments of paper here on our island once a year. Papers run out. Next year it'll come in. We don't know what it'll be. Price that. This year, the paper was at $10 a ream. So we make an agreement that next year you'll give me $100 now, and I'll deliver to you 10 reams next year when the next shipment comes in. Okay? So that was the going rate last time we saw $10 per. some agree 10 reams for $100, that seems like legitimate. But even that is still usur midirabbanan, because what could we don't know what will happen. But it's very likely what will happen is, when I find liver paper to you, paper will be running this year, you know, at $12 a ream. And so really, when I give you the 10 reams I promised you, you're getting $120 of value for $100 of purchase, which means you're really getting midirabbanan. You're getting value more than you laid out. That's usur midirabbanan, to extend such a, to enter such, it's called a forward contract in the first place, but also be forbidden. Here we don't even know what's going to happen, but that already the rabbi said no, you can't do that either, because we don't know what will be. And when the dust settles, it could look like interest. Now, there are two basic categories of heter, which is very important, which may or may not deal with shuk, but it certainly will deal more with what goes on oftentimes. Number one is the heter called yeshlo. Yeshlo means, unlike the examples I gave to you before, where we're on an island, there's no paper here now, or we're in the, I'm a watermelon salesman, there's no watermelons here now. Let's just say that we're back in the real world and I have a paper mill, and there's always paper in the mill. But you don't, and you want to order, you know, one ream of paper now, whatever. But bigger than a ream, they come like these huge numbers, whatever. It doesn't matter. You order a pallet. We sell paper by the pallet, which is, you know, 40 reams, and who the heck needs 40 reams of, you know, maybe one ream a week for your printing machine. You don't need to put a pallet of paper now. So you agree now to pay me for the whole pallet, right, the $4,000 for the pallet, and I'd agree to you, you know, every Monday to ship you another, right, my delivery guy will bring you another, you know, the ream to your office. So that will be permissible. Even though, of course, the year, the price of paper could fluctuate. But since right now the price of paper is talking about $4,000 for one pallet, and I have it in stock, you're essentially, you could look at it as a prepayment for the whole year's delivery, but the truth is, since anyways I have it in stock, you could take it if you wanted to. Since you could take it if you want to, it's like it's here ready. So that's called yeshlo. Since I have it in stock, you might have not taken possession of that paper. You don't want to take possession because, you know, paper's liable to get, you know, water damage or whatever. You don't want to take possession. You're just saying, I'll pay you the $4,000 now in exchange for getting delivered paper once a month for the next year. That's fine. Because I have it in stock, yeshlo, I have it here now. It's like you bought it, it's as if you could have or did or would have, or if you wanted to, you could have bought it now, and therefore the fact that there'll be price fluctuations later on is no problem. No problem. So that would be like, it's not exactly a forward contract, but that would be permissible. Yeah, well, he's more than the shomer. He's actually not even buying it. He's not even. I'm not even. When I enter that agreement, when you enter that agreement for me, the paper merchant, you're not saying to me, keep my pallet in your warehouse and deliver it over the course of the year. Not saying that. In which case, I'd become the shomer. You're just saying, listen, I need, you know, one ream a month, a week, whatever it is. Here's the money for a whole year's worth up front, delivered over the course of the year. That's okay. But I'm not a shomer of anything because. Not you. So in theory, you could have taken your pallet home with you now, and I'll give it to you because I have it in stock. But you're not taking the pallet. You're not taking anything. So I'm not showing anything to you. I just have a liability to you. Which in truth, actually, by the way, is a deeper obligation than a showmer. Because if I have a fire in my shop, and I was a showmer, I'd say, listen, what do you want? That's an onus. Not my fault. But that's not, if I owe you the money, it's a contract. Who cares about a fire? It's not your problem. So it's actually, you're better off than regular shomer. That's yeshlo. The second category of heter is, even if I don't have it, even if I myself happen to not have, you know, pallets of paper lying around here, but there's paper in the marketplace. You know, I don't work in such big quantities out of my you know, small operation. So, you know, we agree you'll pay me now front $4,000 for a year's worth of paper delivery. That's cool. Even if I don't actually have a full pallet of paper here in stock now, so you can't actually buy it if you wanted to, still, if that's the going price in the marketplace, you know, it's a commodity, everyone knows what paper goes for, and even if you could have bought it from somebody else, or if you would have given the money, I could have just gone next door and picked some up from my competitor and given it to you. So that's called Yatza Hashar, like the price is out in the street and everyone knows and it's available. That would also be okay. That would also be okay. Because it's as if you want, you could go and acquire that stuff now, even not from me, but from somebody else. Okay, so either of those two things would be okay. So let me just sum up. This is just the principles. It's fabulous. You know, I just met. This is like a dumbed down, simple guide to it. And it's a very good book. It's massive, right? So basically, what I laid out for you takes up 450 pages. This book. It's very the application is complicated, but the principles hopefully are Not that complicated. So now I'm just going to sum up one time, then we'll start the first Mishnah. Yeah? I'm just going to sum up here. For somebody to be ribbit storaisa, has to have to meet the two conditions, and keep on coming up. Derech halva, it has to be a loan, as opposed to a mecca, a financial transaction, and has to be ktsutza, has to be set at the time the loan was made, that I'm getting some value in excess of what I gave you a principal. If it's either not set at the time, maktsutza, or if it's not done as a loan, derech halva, then it's only midirabanan, avak ribis, if I get value more than I gave you. And that also assumes that at the time that you gave me money, I don't have the heter either of Yeshlo, meaning you had it in my possession, or Yad Sashar, there's a fixed price, the marketplace, everyone knows it, and we could consummate the transaction if we so wanted to. Okay? That's a summary. Now, introduction.